Hello, I'm Ian McAllister, writer and reviewer for The Giant Brain, dog owner, husband, and cyclist.
Hello, I'm Jamie Adams, owner of Surprisingly Expensive Cardboard.
Hello, I'm Sam Maggs, and I'm a recent recycler of lots of cardboard. All will be explained soon. And this is Brainwaves, bringing you the latest and greatest in tabletop gaming news. And these are the headlines for week beginning the 13th of May 2018. Space Goat Games comes cap in hand to backers for more money. Award season begins. Mensa Awards and Dice Tower Award nominations have been revealed. And is Asmodee to be sold?
Yes, so Space Goat Games were a company that have kickstarted a couple of games recently. Well, not too recently. Evil Dead 2 was a couple of years ago. And they also had the Terminator license as well. Now, people started to get a bit worried about a year ago when Evil Dead 2 was meant to have been delivered and nothing appeared, and they'd put up the Terminator game for backing. And now Space Goat Games have come back to their backers in a post that has been shared around various social media sites, including Board Game Geek, Twitter, etc., with a new campaign for WeFunder, which is a sort of site where you can basically sort of invest in a company. And they're basically saying, please give us money, backers, for the games you don't have that you've already given us money for. So they're asking for more cash from their backers who have already given them money. On top of this, their head honcho has come under criticism for sexism, bullying, and abusive behavior within his company. So it all seems like it's going to the wall for this company. It really does seem mad.
So how long ago were the Evil Dead and Terminator?
I think Evil Dead was 2016, meant to deliver 2017, and Terminator was last year.
And neither have been...
Neither have been fulfilled.
Okay, this is crazy.
The theory
isn't it?
Going around that I've heard from a couple of places is that they used the money from Evil Dead 2 to buy the Terminator license. They thought that their Evil Dead 2 campaign did something like $750,000. The Terminator one did much less, around about $250,000. Mm-hmm. So the theory going around is that they thought they'd take the money from Evil Dead 2, invest it in the Terminator one to get the license, and it would be a massive success again, and they'd be golden. That has not proved to be the case, and now they're in trouble. And there's a lot of angry backers.
Is there any, last episode we talked a lot about legality of things and laws around, well, we talked about copyright law, but is there any law around saying you'll do one thing with a Kickstarter and not doing that with that money?
Basically, no. Kickstarter has a responsibility thing, and a couple, I know of a few legal cases that involve Kickstarters. And I followed one that involved like a deck of playing cards that there was basically a lawsuit for because it didn't get fulfilled and all sorts of stuff. And there's been various sort of civil lawsuits and that kind of thing, but nothing really in Kickstarter. And this is the problem with crowdfunding. We at Brainwaves would like to remind everyone that Kickstarter, although it looks like a shop, is absolutely not. You may not get the thing that you back. But I think that's a longer conversation for another time.
And we're now into award season, with the announcement of both the Mensa Select Awards and the Dice Tower Award nominations. First, we had the announcement for the Mensa Select Awards. 300 judges play games for 40 plus hours straight. And the games are rated on originality, gameplay, play value, aesthetics, and instructions. And the winners this year are Azul from Plan B Games, Constellations, the game of stargazing and the night sky from Extranaut Enterprises, Ex Libris from Renegade Game Studio, Photosynthesis from Blue Orange Games, and Raiders of the North Sea from Renegade Game Studios. I own and have played Ex Libris, Photosynthesis, and Raiders of the North Sea. I've had some, they're pretty good. I think this is very well deserved.
Yeah, Azul's excellent. I picked that up recently. It's a really interesting little abstract. It's good.
I think it's quite interesting that they judge it on, you know, many different things, but they also take the price into consideration. And I think that's something that's not really talked about in a lot of gaming circles, especially with
Definitely,
nowadays
yeah.
how the price is rising, and in the nicest way possible. Ex Libris is a pricey game. So not only did we have the Mensa Select Awards, we also had the announcement for the nominations for the Dice Tower Awards. Leading the charge was Gloomhaven with 7 awards. and Century Spice Road and Seventh Continent followed closely with 5 apiece. There is, as usual, a great number of categories. I'm just going to name them very quickly. We have the most innovative game, the best two-player game, the best theming, the best strategy game, the best reprint, the best party game, best game from a small publisher, best game from a new designer, best family game, best expansion, best cooperative game, best board game production, best game artwork, and best game of the year.
Sounds a bit like the Oscars of board games.
That does sound a little bit, doesn't it? I've taken note of something like Fog of Love, a game that we've talked about before, is up for most innovative and best two-player game.
We'll put a link to the full list in the show notes, and you can go and have a look and see what's up for awards there. Finally, in our headlines today, we have a rumor going around that Asmodee may be looking to be sold. So what happened in 2013 was that Asmodee was bought by a venture capital group called Eurazeo, E-U-R-A-Z-E-O, and that might account for some of the rapid expansion we've seen from Asmodee in the last few years, gobbling up companies like Fantasy Flight Games. And now they are investigating selling it, according to the Reuters news agency. The rough valuation is in the region of 1.5 billion euros, which is quite a stack of money. But who knows what will come out of this. Maybe it won't get sold in the end. Maybe we'll see someone like Hasbro picking it up. It's hard to tell exactly what's happening at the moment. This is a fairly new bit of news that's popped down in the last day or so. So it's very early days as to what's going to happen there.
In a sense, with it being Asmodee, that's almost valuing the biggest of the big companies in tabletop gaming itself. You know, definitely in that figure aren't companies like Games Workshop, but you know, you've got Fantasy Flight in there, you've got Z-Man Games in there, you've got, am I right in saying, Days of Wonders in there
Days
as well? Publishers of some of the biggest
did
games.
Did they not scoop up the remnants of Mayfair?
They took up Mayfair as well, yeah.
And in more news this week, one of the biggest pieces of news that came out of last week anyway, I think it was on the 1st of May, is the announcement of X-Wing 2nd Edition from Fantasy Flight. So X-Wing's a miniatures game. I'm sure many people know this. It's the biggest selling miniatures game in the world. Overtook 40K a while back. Originally released in 2012, and it just skyrocketed from there. And the designers were just saying it got to a point where the game was just becoming a bit too cumbersome for itself. Certain things that needed to be playtested just couldn't be playtested. All the upgrades that were coming to the game, all the ships that were in the game were just kind of clogging themselves up and becoming a bit nightmarish to handle. So they decided that a straight-up reboot of the game, a rebalancing of every ship in the game, and essentially just announcing an entire second edition from the game was the way forwards. This has come to a bit of backlash from the fans, which we'll get onto later in our brainstorming segment when we talk about multiple editions of games. But overall, I think there's definitely a positive.
Yeah, I generally think it's a good thing. I mean, the reboot of Netrunner has given me renewed enthusiasm for the game. But we'll see how it shakes out in the end.
A new game has been announced from IDW Games, makers of Planet of the Apes and Legend of Korra Pro Bending Arena. Batman the Animated Series, Gotham Under Siege. Designed by Richard Lonius, it is a game based on the first season of Batman the Animated Series cartoon. Allegedly, the game is going to feature the full range of Batman's rogues gallery, although so far the only villain seen is the Joker. The game is also going to come with 3D buildings to give the game more of a table presence. Games are going to play in 45 minutes to an hour, and it's been teased for later in the year, around August time.
My question is, how many Batman miniatures games do we need?
We currently have three. We have Batman the Miniatures game from Night Models. We have Batman Gotham City Chronicles from Monolith Games. And now we have Batman the Animated Series Gotham Under Siege.
That's a lot of Batman.
That is
like
a
Batman.
Lot of Batman.
Pandasaurus Games have announced a really intriguing new board game called Nyctophobia. The game, which names translates to Fear of the Dark, sees its players donning blindfolds whilst one player plays the hunted and keeps their sight for the remainder of the game, trapping the other players into a maze which they must escape using their other senses, mainly, by the looks of things, their sense of touch, with the game having a very tactile board, lots of very tactile components, and it just looks really interesting. Don't know what you guys think about it.
I think it's fantastic. Apparently, the designer originally came up with the idea to, because she wanted to play a game with her blind uncle. Like, actually restricting a sense to use another one is a fascinating piece of design. And it's really cool to see board game designers going outside the normal sort of mechanics of things and trying something different. Who knows if it's any good, but I'm really happy to see this kind of thing being tried. It's great.
Absolutely. There are two versions of the game coming out. There is a standard release game called Nyctophobia The Hunted. It's also releasing a different edition exclusively for Target customers in the United States called Nyctophobia Vampire Encounter.
Yeah, they've said it does add extra complexity to the game and extra additional rules, and it isn't just a reskin with vampires.
And speaking about darkness, you can escape from more Dark Castle coming later this year from Themeborn Games. Escape the Dark Castle was their game based on sort of 1980s fighting fantasy books, choose your own adventures and that kind of thing. It was shown off at UK Games Expo last year, and they had a Kickstarter round about the same time. I picked it up, absolutely love it, fantastic little filler game. And they've got two new expansions coming, Scourge of the Undead Queen and Blight of the Plague Lord. And I think they're going to give people the opportunity to pick up the expansion that was along with the first Kickstarter called Cult of the Death Knight. And they've also said there's going to be some additional things within their Kickstarter that fans have been asking for. I don't know what those things are going to be, but it might be like custom sleeves and that kind of thing. I know the community have been asking for that kind of thing. So we'll see what comes of that. I'm hoping to speak to Themeborn at UK Games Expo when I'm down. And yeah, we'll see what they're coming up with. I know they've got a couple other games under their belt. So yeah, they're an interesting new company. They're doing some great things, and they've run a very successful campaign so far. So hopefully the second one will be just as good.
And finally, wrapping up the news this week, we've got some RPG news. First off comes from the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society and their Dark Adventure Radio Theatre line. So they're turning the Call of Cthulhu campaign, Masks of Nyarlathotep, hope I pronounced that correctly, into a radio drama. So this is their 20th production in the Dark Adventure Radio Theatre line. They say it's going to have a 6-hour runtime, full cast, full production, full orchestral score. Yeah, and just looking at other stuff they've done, they look absolutely fantastic. Being released online and on CD, they said it's going to start recording soon, so just keep an eye out on their website. That's the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society for a bit more on that.
I think one of the reasons they're going to be doing it is that Chaosium are releasing a new version of Masks later this year, a big new edition of it, so that'll be one of the reasons they're coming back to it now.
And in a bit more RPG news, Fantasy Flight Games have announced that they're to release a starter set for Legend of the Five Rings, the role-playing game, later this year. This uses their role-playing canvas, essentially the Genesis system, that we've seen now in a few games. I believe it might not have started with this, but it was used throughout their line of Star Wars role-playing games. And then they announced it as the Genesis system, where you make any setting into this system. And I know they've just come out with a Runebound setting for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to see them using the Genesis system. I think it came about first in Wuthrop Third. I think that's when it first sort of like popped its head up. And like you say, it's been through the Star Wars lines, and now they're using it for L5R. I'm not a great fan of generic RPG systems. I think they can feel a bit restrictive, like the 2D21 from Modiphius. I'm not a great fan of the Star Trek Adventures implementation of that, though I've heard the Infinity one is quite good.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll see it. We'll see how it goes. It might be worth trying out. I'm sure someone will run it for me at some point. I mean, there's certainly been a bunch of generic sort of systems over. They've never really ever grabbed me, like sort of like Grantham role playing.
GURPS, commonly known as GURPS. The game.
Sorry guys, we're having some technical difficulties in the studio.
Hello and welcome to Bunker 42, the entertainment bunker. We've just recently got power back to this section of the complex and have discovered some broadcasting equipment, so we thought it was high time to put on a radio show. Please remember to take your medication daily and never leave your barracks without your mask. As we all know, the authority mandated that each of us could only take one board game with us into the bunker due to the low number of available Kallax units in our IKEA supplied accommodations. Since board gaming had become the primary worldwide hobby, this seemed only right, and we thank our benevolent rulers for allowing us such a thing. Do not question the authority.
Do not question the authority.
With me in the studio today is Mark McKinnon, one of several designers to have survived the event. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Ian. Man, it's dangerous out there.
It certainly is, Mark, and we are very appreciative of you making the journey to the bunker. Of course, you have your own game with you, as mandated by the authority.
Do not question the authority.
And what game is it that you managed to bring down into the bunker with you?
So I've managed to bring down Kingdom Death. It was a bit tight getting it down the hatch, but I managed it. I've maybe pulled some back muscles, but I'll live.
Oh, that's quite right. It is certainly a very large game. Tell us a little bit about Kingdom Death and what it's about.
So Kingdom Death is set in some kind of nightmarish realm where you start off with survivors who don't know how they got there, and they're immediately set upon by a giant white lion. So the premise of the game is that you are surviving in this nightmarish world by hunting creatures, collecting resources from them from your kills, and then using them to upgrade your gear and also create a settlement that you can return to. It helps you to make better things. So you create buildings, you innovate to get more stuff.
Sounds very much like the activities that we all engage in on a daily basis here in the bunker.
Oh yeah, definitely.
What sort of gameplay is within this game? What sort of day-to-day activities can you expect to take place in Kingdom Death?
So your day starts, you wake up in your settlement, you have a little bit about, you know, you go, you make your breakfast out of whatever creature that you killed last night. You then maybe go down to the local shop, craft some leather gear, maybe a bone dagger, and then you all sit around the lantern hoard and you decide who are we going to eat next. And then you think, right, do you know what, I think we'll hunt the white lion again today. So you decide on your party, you gear up, and then you go on the hunt for them. So what happens is you leave your settlement, which then takes you on to a journey on to the hunt itself, which is filled with all manner of nasty things. I don't think I've actually seen a good one yet. As you track down the quarry, so you eventually do catch up to the white lion, in which case it then turns into the showdown, and then it turns into a nice big battle royale for survival. Who comes out top, whether it's the lion or whether it's your survivors, and it really can go either way for quite a lot of these creatures.
Of course, back when we were still using money, this game was quite expensive and very exclusive. Do you think it was a worthwhile purchase for you back in the day?
It definitely was, yeah. It contains a lot of content and it'll see me through many a wasteland night. But the good thing about this game is that it can also double up as protection. So I can use its heft as a weapon to fight off all manner of creatures and raiders out there that might want to try and interrupt our nice little existence that we have going on here.
Yes, excellent suggestion. Of course, board games are an excellent tool to be used to beat up any kind of raiders that may come into the bunker. And we are, of course, all wanting to make sure that no one comes into the bunker at any time. Do not open the doors, no matter what.
Do not open the doors.
Well, thank you very much for coming on to the show, Mark. And we hope to see you again if you survive the night.
Thank you. I hope so too.
Sorry about the technical issues, folks, but we'll carry on with the shows like the consummate professionals that we are. And now we're going to move into our brainstorm section. So, yes, as we mentioned earlier on in the news, X-Wing 2nd Edition is out, and there has been controversy amongst the community. Some people saying it'll be great for the game, bring in new players, reset the game, balance things up. Others apocalyptically angry that their vast collections are now useless and that Fantasy Flight will come in and take their games away from them. So what we'd like to talk about today is, should games be given 2nd, 3rd or 4th editions? And if so, why? What do we think, guys?
I think it's purely out of necessity, I think. I think if a game's getting old, maybe a bit overbearing, there's too much to it. In the case of X-Wing, I definitely think it was that we simply can't playtest this anymore. It's getting out of hand. There's too many things that we're having to make minor fixes for for no real reason other than we didn't have the foresight in the past that this would happen. So the easiest thing to do is end that there, make a new edition, clean things up, and go into it thinking, okay, this is a game that's going to last 4, 5, 6 years. How do we make it the perfect thing now so that when we implement those changes, it's fine along the road?
Yeah, I mean, they recently did it with Netrunner as well. They rebooted it into a new edition. Well, did a new starter set to bring new players into the game.
Yeah.
Got rid of a lot of old cards that were problematic because, like you say, designers can't have perfect foresight. They can't see what will necessarily become powerful,
yeah,
or degenerate strategies. And they basically burn a lot of old cards to the ground, put in some new ones, brought in a new designer. And yeah, I haven't played a lot of the new Netrunner because I haven't had the chance, but it certainly reinvigorated my interest in the game.
Did they change the rules in any way, or was it just kind of changing cards? And
they've been cleaning up the rules for a little while.
Or was it more of a rotation kind of?
It was more rotation. And so, like, yeah, something like Magic the Gathering does this all the time, and players don't blink an eyelid.
And I think it's because it's not sold as a new edition.
Yeah.
With Magic the Gathering, it's if you want to play competitively, you play with the last 2 years' worth of cards.
Yeah.
And players accept that. But it's not saying, you know, they don't say you have to buy all these new things. I think players just know that is the way their game works, and they accept that.
It's also because, yeah, they've never officially announced any edition changes. It is just simply they're releasing new waves and new sets of cards, so you've got to keep up to be able to compete competitively. You know, and I mean, it is predominantly miniatures games and role-playing games that get new editions. You know, especially, you know, I haven't played X-Wing. I've only played Star Trek Attack Wing. But I'm guessing the games are very similar in that power creep. As you said, you know, the games become unwieldy and unbalanced. Power creep becomes such a problem that it's not a let's all burn it down to the ground and start again. It's let's take a step back. And we want people to keep being interested. So we'll keep bringing out these things that are powerful and interesting and new. And it just kind of seems to invalidate a lot of
Looking at the changes they've implemented in second edition, it's very much saying, like, because power creep was such a big thing and people were playing with the past, you know, 2-3 waves of ships, and those older original ships were being left in the dirt, really, they were having to come out with upgrade cards and little fixes for ships, or change the upgrade bars of ships, or change, in some extreme cases, completely changed the text on a card so it's actually viable to play again, because no one's playing with the ship that is the name of the game.
Yeah, you know? Well, and also the most important thing about Second Edition X-Wing is there's going to be an X-Wing with little S-foils that you can make open and close.
So they'll be eminently breakable.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's a matter of resetting the game, and it also brings new blood into the hobby, and that's something that these kind of competitive games need. If the community is just, like, we talked about the reboot of Vitesse in the last in the last episode, Vampire the Eternal Struggle card game, and I've seen a little bit more about that now, and it is older players just producing cards for those players, and there's no attempt to reboot the game, no attempt to bring in new blood. I saw a conversation which is basically like, yeah, you need some of the base cards, which are basically unobtainable now to play with these cards. So what's the point? Like, the players of the game that still have cards want some new stuff, that's fine, but you're not bringing new blood in, you're not revitalizing the game,
I think a prime example of that revitalizing a game would be something like the Game of Thrones LCG 2nd Edition, where Fantasy Flight had that license long before Game of Thrones was what it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, before the series even started, they had it, you know, 10, 12 years ago, they had that license. And the LCG had got to a point where people who loved the show want to get into that game. But there's so much of it, and what do you buy? You know, so the easiest thing for them to say was, we're starting from scratch. If you want to play Game of Thrones LCG, this is where you buy into it. This is how you buy into it.
That's actually the second reboot of that game as well. It was a CGG originally.
Yeah, no, absolutely, yeah.
It's just proof that you, like you were saying for The Eternal Struggle, it's you can't keep a game propped up entirely on its existing fan base, because you always need invigoration, because the most expensive stuff invariably is going to be the starter set, and who's the best people to get the starter set? New people.
Yeah, the reality of that kind of game is that there will always be players leaving for a variety of reasons. They've got bored, they don't have time, their priorities change, all sorts of stuff. You need to constantly bring in new people. And it's one of the things that you see that has been interesting to watch in the new edition of D&D is that they have made a mass effort to really bring people into the hobby with like Twitch streaming to encourage people, that kind of side of stuff, the more social aspect of like watching people play D&D online and that kind of thing, and that's been massive success. And one of the things I noticed recently, because I've started D&D 5th campaign, and there is actually very little out for it. So if you want to buy everything, you can within reason. There's not a huge number of splat books like there have been for previous editions. You can actually, and there's a lot for free. Like the player's starting guide is like 120 pages, gives you character creation and the rules. Like it's massive. Like the free stuff you can get is massive.
And completely.
So, and that's a new addition to that game. And RPGs are used to that kind of churn. But there's always been edition wars, because there always will be.
Of course.
Look at companies like Games Workshop and their reboot of Fantasy, which is, you know, was essentially a new edition of Fantasy, if you don't want to call it that, with Age of Sigmar. And breaking news. 2 days after recording this podcast, on Saturday the 12th of May at Warhammer Fest, Games Workshop has announced a new edition of Age of Sigmar, along with other classic games, including Adeptus Titanicus. Coincidence? Yes. Back to the show. If you don't want to call it that, with Age of Sigmar, and the completely different way they approached selling that game and saying, if you want to buy into it, your rules are free online. All your point costs, everything, you can just find. It's there for you. You don't have to buy into all these kind of things to actually get into this game. And I think there's a lot of new editions coming out that maybe, like you said, with Dungeons & Dragons and having that almost free to play, essentially, to begin with. Just signs of technology changing and the age we're living in, and how do you get people into games? And it is, you know, Twitch streaming, giving, you know, putting so much online community out there and community support online, and actually having conversations with your customer base.
And all, by all accounts, especially the D&D thing, it's succeeded massively. You know, millions of people have got into it, and it's been doing lots of things. I think they made, personally, I think they made a good choice by going very light/vague on any particular setting. Of course, the main one is always going to be the Forgotten Realms, but as you said, you know, there's not many splat books. Apart from the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, which is sort of a splat book and sort of a realm setting guide, there's really been not very much. So you can just go, do whatever you want. Here in the back of the book, in the back of the player's handbook, is the gods of various settings that are established. But feel free. Feel free, go ahead.
Yeah, it's very telling that there's not been here's Eberron, here's Ravenloft, here's Dark Sun. There's none of that. Mm-hmm. And whether there will be or not is matter for debate, but bringing it back to sort of editions, companies are always going to want to reboot games of licenses they own, because in the end they're in it to make money.
Of course,
yeah, they're producing games, but they need to constantly revive games and constantly bring people in. So new editions are good, and it also means it's something I haven't talked about yet, is that like old games are basically unobtainable. We will see new editions of those board games, just regular board games that people want to get their hands on. And we're seeing a few things like restoration games are bringing back games. But companies do it all the time. They pick up the rights to old board games and release them. And no one blinks an eyelid at that. Okay, the occasional person that thinks they have a rare gem in their collection might be a bit annoyed. But there's not the level of vitriol you get from the part of the player base in competitive games.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say, I think we've been talking a lot about miniatures games. We've been talking a lot about role-playing games. I think it's quite interesting that we haven't been talking a lot about board games. But as you said, they do a lot. It said it's not editions, it's reprinting. And that's, you know, it's almost like a slightly different system. And if a game is being reprinted, it's usually, or a new edition, it's one for one of two reasons, or three reasons, actually. Either one, it's done really well, X down the line and needs to be brought back. Two, nostalgia has just completely driven it. With restoration games bringing back Stop Thief Downforce and Fireball Island, for example. Or the example of something like Fury of Dracula, as a good example, is that A, it's a popular game, so it's getting reprinted, so it kind of fulfills the first one, but also it's a change in studio that's created or has got the license for it. So obviously now we've got the fourth one announced, so it went from Games Workshop to Fantasy Flight. Fantasy Flight stayed for second and third, and now we've got a fourth edition announced, and it's just shown it's popular, and it's a change in studio.
I think it shows that this is a very common thing, that actually each episode now, one of our new segments has been about either a reprint or a new edition of a game, that this is something that happens very regularly and I think is very common in the industry.
And basically get over it.
Yeah.
It's just going to continue to happen.
Completely.
I mean, Fantasy Flight aren't coming in your house, like, beating you to the ground and stealing your X-Wing first edition cards.
Ian, I don't know. Have you seen the Fantasy Flight forums? People are believing that.
They are crazy.
There are people demanding that Fantasy Flight send out a free conversion kit, which is basically all the cards, all the tokens, all the dials for the first edition ships into second edition. They are demanding that Fantasy Flight sends a free conversion kit out to veteran players of the game for no other reason than they are a veteran player of the game, which doesn't mean anything.
I'm a veteran player. I saw someone saying, surely we should be able to present Fantasy Flight with all of our proof of purchase tokens and get the upgrades for the ships that we can prove we've purchased in the past. So the way they're basically doing this, all your ships are backwards compatible. And I think the problem where it lies is something like a Games Workshop miniatures game. Because there aren't those upgrade cards and those cardboard components, all you need to do to upgrade your army is buy the new codex and the new rulebook.
And you're done.
Yeah. However, with X-Wing, there is a lot of cardboard. Obviously, all the ships, all the stats, all the upgrades are physical. And it's how do they keep that going? And I think they've done the best they can, which is provide...
Yeah,
conversion kits for each faction. People are saying they cost a lot of money. They're priced at $50 a piece.
I've seen a lot of places offer for $100 for all three or something.
And that's what I'm going to do. A reference to my intro to the podcast today was that what do you do with all your first edition cardboard components? So because they are essentially rendered useless, if you want to call it
that. You should do what any reasonable person would do, Sam, and that's set them on fire, film it, and then put it on Twitter in an angry rant.
Has that happened?
No, but I'd imagine it might.
So I just ended up being good for the planet, and I put all my cardboard in the recycling bin, and it felt really weird. It was a lot of stuff.
Very responsible of you.
Yeah, and I think the overall message is don't be scared of change. It happens for a reason. The reason is there if you look for it. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But
yeah, and it happens continuously. This stuff is always getting renewed, always getting new additions.
Completely.
And especially if you get into a competitive game, you should absolutely expect it to rotate or get a new addition or something like that. At some point, you should be prepared for that eventuality. But don't be afraid of it, because it'll bring new blood in and you'll get more opponents. And that's good. And finally on the news today, My Little Scythe has become a reality. This started out as a sort of hack of Scythe done by a father and daughter team. They posted about on Twitter and various other places. It garnered a huge amount of sort of praise for the ingenuity of a father making a game with his daughter that they could play together. And now Stonemaier Games have actually picked it up and are going to be releasing it in an actual edition. It looks like a gorgeous little game. Woodland friends sort of like bounding about a land, making friendships and all sorts of things. Lots of cool little miniatures. There's an excellent little YouTube video that we'll put up in the show notes. Go and give it a check out, and yeah, maybe back it if you've got kids and want to play that kind of thing.
It truly looks fantastic.
It looks gorgeous, and I love that a father and daughter we love this game, but you know, it's the artwork's not for us, all the other stuff, the war is not great, so we'll make a My Little Pony version, because that's what originally started as. And then Jimmy Stegmaier and Stonemaier Games went, oh yeah, this is brilliant. Here we go.
More of this community.
Community engagement.
Give the people what they want.
Apart from a free conversion kit, because we're a veteran gamer. Thanks very much for listening. If you like what you've listened to, then the best way to help us out is to share the podcast and drop us a review and rating on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at The Giant Brain, Instagram at Giant Brain UK, Facebook, The Giant Brain, website, giantbrain.co.uk, or you can email us at giantbrainuk@gmail.com. If you have any gaming news, if you have any feedback, if you've got any questions for any of us, just don't be afraid, fire out an email. We'll talk about it, we'll bring it up. We want to hear from you. You can also support us via Patreon or Ko-fi, both links you'll find on the website. You'll also find links to all the news that we talked about in our show notes. Thanks for listening. Take care.